state the best authentic truth. Can't underestimate SB and Sean. Breaking through the noise, serving real talk, the genuine choice. No pretense, no hidden schemes. Just sports, passion, fueling dreams. From the field to the court, every play that's made. Real takes over fake debates. Turn it up, hear the honest sound. Unfiltered sports all year round. Discussions pure, no masquerade. Real takes over fake debates. Turn it up.
Takes over fake debates. And we are live. SB Talk Sports, Sean Webb. Real takes over fake debates. It is Friday, Sean. Day one of the World Series. NBA is back this week. We still got football this week. Even if you like hockey, you watch it. We got hockey back too, man. It's a good time. It's the most wonderful time of the year for a sports fan, though. But, Sean, how are you doing
today? Doing good, SB. Looking forward to kickoff of the World Series, as you mentioned. And like you said, this is a great time of the year for any sports fan. So, looking forward to this next week of sports.
Yeah. I'm happy with everything. I bet you guys, if you are listening and watch, make sure you guys like, make sure you guys share, make sure you guys subscribe. Also, if you guys listen on Apple, Spotify, or iHeart, make sure you guys leave a 5-star review. Make sure you guys share it out and give us a good listen. But Sean, we're gonna get right, huh?
You always got to do the drop. You got to let the lady.
Oh yeah, I'm trying to take a job. That's all. I'm trying to take a job. I think I do it just as good. I probably don't. But let her tell you.
Real Takes Over Fake Debates has invaded the audio podcast world. Add Real Takes Over Fake Debates on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartMedia. Leave a 5-star review and comment below. New episodes every Monday and Friday.
You heard the lady, every Monday and Friday. But Sean, we got to get right into it because there's a lot of things going on in the sports world. But since it's a World Series night and the World Series going on, we got to talk about this right here. Me and you both being Yankees fans, I've been telling you I've been on and off, like watching, just checking in on the Yankees, then when the playoffs came in, I'm like, okay. And I kept telling you, Sean, I was like, this feel like the year, Sean, this feel like the year, but it's set. Now, I know we is a strong word, I know I'm supposed to be a fan during this time, but it's the World Series. I'm being a fan today, I don't care, I'm saying we today. We got one of the toughest matchups that could possibly happen. We got the Dodgers and Ohtani. Ohtani is a real-life creative player. But what is your preview of tonight's game and your overall preview of the series?
So I think, SB, this is a very, very even matchup. When you just talk about just the lineups, the star power in the lineups, when you talk about Shohei, obviously, Mookie Betts, you know, Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, you know, a lot of hitting ability up and down the lineups. This series, to me and for me, is going to come down to just, you know, the ability of those lineups to hit, certainly, but be the strength of the Yankees starting rotation, which is a strong point for the Yankees in this series.
Yeah.
But the Dodgers have the strength in the bullpen. And so, you know, what's the chess match going to be in terms of how, you know, pitching is managed in this series, you know, particularly, you know, with, again, how long do you let your starters go if you're the Dodgers, knowing that the strength of your pitching is your bullpen compared to the Yankees. Yeah. So and that's why there were some talks about Shohei Ohtani potentially. You know, would he pitch in this series? He's not going to pitch in this series, which is, you know, if you as a Yankees fan, thank you.
Thank you, yes.
But, you know, I say that to say this is a very, very evenly matched series. And Dodgers have home field advantage, obviously. So, you know, the Yankees have to win one in L.A. to win the series.
Which we can do.
You know, we'll see. And, you know, you got your ace going tonight in game one, Gerrit Cole. You know, how's the layoff going to affect both teams? Because neither team has played, you know, in a few days. Obviously, the Yankees clinched, you know, last Saturday evening. So, yes, you know, going to be curious to see how that plays out. But that said, this is going to be, I think, an exciting World Series. And as we said, you know, in a previous podcast, I think this is great for baseball.
Yes.
To bring some, you know, some of the national attention back to baseball in a very, very crowded sports cycle, as we mentioned. This is nothing against the Guardians and the Mets. If this had been the Guardians and the Mets in the World Series,
nobody would care.
It would have gotten great regional coverage, but not the national coverage that this is going to get. And again, no slight to either of those teams. They had great seasons. When you talk about branding and the two best teams in baseball, I think these were the two best teams in baseball this year. And the Phillies would be third, but I said, this is the series that MLB wants.
Oh, 100%, because who wouldn't want to watch the Dodgers and the Yankees? And honestly, like, I think the two biggest fan bases, obviously, you know, like you said, you got the Phillies and, you know, you got the Red Sox, you know, Boston, but it hit different when it's the Yankees and the Dodgers. Like, they have, like, a cult fan base on both sides, honestly, bigger. You know, Boston kind of got their little hometown thing. Phillies is, yeah, whatever. They definitely not, we do not bring up the Astros. So for anybody to comment Astros, the Astros will not be brought up on this podcast for certain reasons. But when you look at the Dodgers and the Yankees, they're like probably the two teams in baseball where they got national fan bases that treat them like they're a home team. Like, I'm from Chicago. I rock with the Yankees better than both the teams here. I'm sorry. If the Yankees on, I'm watching the Yankees. I don't care if it's Cubs, I'm watching the Yankees. If anytime I can go to one of the games, I try my – if is the Yankees playing the Cubs, Yankees playing the Sox, then I go. But now, when it comes to the World Series preview, I think tonight's game is I want to say a must win, but I think you want to start this series off strong and punch LA in the face early, because like you said, this is most dead end. This is dead even series all around. Every team got their slight things that's better than, and obviously I want to emphasize with Yankees the bullpen. I want us to start strong and balance out the bullpen compared to the Dodgers, because obviously Dodgers have the better bullpen. I think we got the better hitters. I think we got the better scores. But I don't want to be in that type of matchup with the Dodgers because of how good their bullpen is compared to ours. So I'm glad that we start Cole early. Let's try. I want us to go get game one. I think game one is a good way to punch them in the face, come in, now put the pressure on the Dodgers to make something happen. And I'm happy that Ohtani is not pitching. Even though they announced it now, you know, people can say something and change it. A big loss could change everything around. Or if somebody in the bullpen don't do their job good enough, hey, Ohtani, go ahead and do your job. We might need you on the mound.
Yeah, I mean, with baseball, they tend not to do that, right? And again, a lot of times, you know, with pitchers especially, you know, he hasn't thrown a bullpen session. He hasn't thrown a simulated game all year. And I presume he hasn't, because that was the agreement this year, coming off the UCL injury that he had the previous year, that he was not going to do any of that. I just don't see them, you know, making that mistake, right? They have a massive investment in Shohei Ohtani, tune of $700 million over 10 years. A great deal of it deferred, but still.
They got their money's worth in the first year already, I can tell you that.
Exactly. So I don't think they want to play around with that. And also for the Dodgers, and again, I'm not saying this, both teams want to win. Both teams want to obviously, you know, hoist the World Series trophy. But the Dodgers just recently hoisted the World Series trophy. So, you know, and I'm not saying that they won't do what it takes to win. I just don't see them compromising Shohei Ohtani long term. by doing something they said. Clearly, they're not organizationally, they're not going to do, which is have him pitch this year.
And then even no matter how talented Shohei Ohtani is, I think also that will be kind of bad for him because you like he really ain't pitched all this year. You just throw him in a pitch in the World Series is crazy. You know, and me as a fan to see Soto at bat and Ohtani on the mound, that'll be like crazy for me to see. But realistically speaking, I have to agree with you, Sean. It doesn't make it's not good for the Dodgers long term, and it's not good for the Dodgers short term because he hasn't been pitching. But if you had to put, if you had to predict how this series will end, what you got?
I'm going to say Yankees in seven. I think this is it would shock me if this series went less than six games. That's how evenly matched I think it is. But that said, I think it's going to take a game seven. And but to me, this series for the Yankees all comes down to, again, we mentioned, you know, starting pitching, but Aaron Judge has to get back close to regular season Aaron Judge. The Dodgers will score runs. And the Yankees can score runs, but it's a lot easier when the Yankees, you know, for the Yankees to score a run when Aaron Judge is playing like Aaron Judge. And while he has some very key moments in the ALCS, you know, in terms of coming up with some big hits and a couple big home runs, you know, I think it, they got to have some consistency from Aaron Judge. So I'm saying Yankees in seven. But again, I don't expect the series to go less than six games.
Yeah, I'm because LA got the home field advantage. I want to say Yankees in six. I want them to try to win convincingly because I just feel like you don't want to take that chance to go back in LA for that 7-1. It can still go either way. So I want to convincingly say Yankees in six. I think they'll be more comfortable, better just to get it over in six. Don't want to leave it up in the air in the game seven in LA. Cause that'll be a tough play ride home, a tough bus ride out of Dodger Stadium when you win Game Seven in LA. It'll be crazy. Let's go ahead and get it over with. Yankees win, and then have a bigger parade than what the Liberty just tried to do. Show you what a real parade looked like, you know, in New York.
That's a sneak diss, but okay, all right.
That was crazy. That was a slight one, huh? Not too much. But speaking of not sneak dissing. I don't know. I couldn't think of a bar for this, but on to the next story. I try. I usually stay in the flow, but I couldn't think of a bar for this. But Tua Tagovailoa is back and cleared and ready to go from concussion protocol. He will start this Sunday. He addressed the media, and the two of the main things I want to point out that was addressed during the media was, one, they asked him, will you wear the Guardian cap? He said no. Now, imagine all of us had different mindsets. Everybody had different mindsets and opinion about the Guardian cap. Does it really work? Is it really worth it? Whatever, cool. 50%, whatever. Even this, he ignored it. Cool. Then they asked him about the concerns about maybe it happening again. He pretty much tried to use the logic of, like, you get in a car accident, Sean, anything can happen. Players take risks every day when they get on that field. But the difference between the other players and Tua, like, first of all, a car accident is an accident. Your job description tells for you to get hit or hit people. You're a football player. But also, you're a rarity from the other football players where you have had multiple concussions and you didn't even get hit hard a lot of those times. Why are you not analyzing that? Because now it's going to get to a point where it's not if it's going to happen again with Tua, which I, God forbid, knock on wood, I don't want it to happen to him. It's almost like when it's going to happen. Because then if it happened again or when it happened again, what is the conversation going to be like now? Y'all going to try to force him to retire now? When they were trying to tell you before, like, okay, because we seen the last one say, okay, let Tua try again. That was just a nasty hit. Maybe he didn't recover. So this last one, it was a regular traditional tackle. He got a concussion. It was frozen. I don't think the public I want to see it, but obviously you can't control what another person, if he don't care about his health, how much can I care about his health? But I think this is, even though the Dolphins do need him, I think this is a bad decision. But Tua is his own man. He got his own family to worry about. I just think his health should have been considered more. What do you think about the situation,
John? You know, SBI, you know, this is not a story that I necessarily enjoy talking about. I think we've talked about it, you know, from multiple angles, from when it first happened to, you know, again, some of the speculation around what he would do with his future. But after listening to him in his press conference the other day, if Tua goes down again, it's not that I won't feel some type of way about it, but I'm less likely to care, given the cavalier attitude that you mentioned about not wearing a guardian cap and all that stuff. I don't think it's, I've been very clear. I thought the NFL should have stepped in and been very much a part of this decision-making process. They decided not to. It's a matter of not, like you said, it's not a matter of if he gets hit, because he's going to get hit. Is if he gets hit, when he gets hit, and he if he goes down again. And I don't want to be insensitive, and I don't want to sound like a jerk saying that, but I'm just not going to. There's not going to be any emotion in it for me because of the approach that you're taking. If you're saying, hey, I'm going to wear the guardian cap, I'm going to try to do things. And again, I think he mentioned, you know, trying to play smarter and things like that. You know,
he's not even a risky player. He don't do nothing risky like that.
Right. You know,
at all.
It's and again, you know, starting on Sunday against Arizona, you know, Shane Steichen, you know, that defense is very athletic. They like to come after you. You saw Monday night. You know what they did, you know. So I just believe that, you know, it's a it could be a mistake, not being a little more taking every precaution that you can. So again, if something happens to him, I'm not going to care. It's going to be, you know, did you do everything in your power? You know, you talk about car accidents. You know, if you choose not to wear a seatbelt, if you're making a choice not to wear a seatbelt, I'm not going to feel as bad for you versus someone who does and takes every precaution. You know, that's how I'm feeling about this Tua situation. And honestly, SB, you know, we try not to make this about our feelings. Ultimately, it's about him and his family and him doing what he thinks is in the best interest of his family.
But I don't see he doing it. I don't. And it's like, how, but like, it's like when you want somebody to do better for themselves, but they don't care enough for it. So it's like, I want you to care about your health, but how can I care about your health if you don't?
Yeah.
I can't, like, and nobody, and it's not like nobody's saying Tua give up on your dreams. It's just like, bro, you got to see the writing on the wall that this is not good for you.
Right.
It's not good for you long term. Like, you done made enough money. And your name is big enough where you're going to probably make some money doing other things. You could probably get a job coaching. You could make money. You play in the NFL. And you play for the Dolphins. Like, in Miami, you'll be fine. I just think you got to look at the bigger picture of that baby that you got at home and your wifey and be like, I need to be able to be functional for you. But he got to make that decision on his own.
Yeah.
Speaking of a team that need to make more better decisions on their own, the Panthers will start Bryce Young Sunday versus the Broncos after Andy Dalton sprained his thumb in the car crash. Crazy, we talking about accidents. I don't think I'm not going to say they lying about the car crash. It could be true. But I don't think the car crash should have been the reason why Bryce Young should have been starting. Bryce Young should have been starting. I got the little first down you benched him. Andy Dalton played good that first game. Whoop-dee-doo. Really was that running back. Made his job easier. The next game, he literally played bad. I'll start Bryce Young back. You're not going to the playoffs. You're not competing for a Super Bowl. Let's see what the kid can truly do. And if he's not your quarterback, you can let him go. And then there's upcoming years, draft a quarterback. And if he does look good, that is your quarterback, because you got to figure out who this kid is, and you're not going to figure it out with him sitting on the bench. We don't want to kill his confidence. What else you going to do? He's on the Panthers. Y'all don't have none of the only thing he could do is play. And if he's not your guy, and we know a lot of people, they done changed stuff in the office where they didn't pick Bryce Young. So usually when new people come in, they want a new guy anyway. Show the fans. So when you make a decision of getting rid of him, get a fans a reason to, like, hey, look, we tried to play him. Didn't work out. Cool. We can win a new direction. But what's your mindset on Bryce Young starting now? Or should he been starting, or what you thinking? Or
this? Well, I mean, I never felt they should have benched him in the first place. And it had nothing to do with Bryce Young's play. I think it had more to do with what is Carolina trying to achieve this season. Nobody had them pegged as a potential playoff team. Nobody had them pegged as a team that could make a Super Bowl run this year. This year should have been about developing Bryce Young under Dave Canales, who you brought in specifically to help continue the growth of the guy you spent the number one pick on last year. This is going to be a very tough game for him. I know we're going to be picking games a little bit later on, but it's going to be a very tough game for him. There's no Adam Thielen. There's no Deontay Johnson in this game. So, and that Broncos defense is
no slouch,
very good. I think, you know, it's a very, very slippery slope for Bryce Young this week, depending on what the expectations are. I want him to play well. I hope he plays well, but if they're going to base the decision long-term on Bryce Young on, you know, him playing well and them winning, I don't see the latter happening on Sunday against the Broncos, particularly without, you know, two of their best receivers. He's starting. I hope he plays well. And again, he's a number one overall pick for a reason. There's another number one overall pick also starting on Sunday as well, who's not started this season too, but you know, there's a reason why those guys are drafted number one. Bryce Young has talent. Bryce Young is a talent. Is this week the week that, you know, again, you get to see maybe him sitting out a couple weeks or him not starting, you know, because he did come in and play some cleanup in a couple games. But is this the week where it's like, okay, you know, him getting a chance to sit out and kind of see the field a little bit differently, and will it help? Let's hope so. But again, considering the opponent, and again, particularly that defense, I think it's just going to be a long Sunday for Carolina and for Bryce Young.
Oh yeah, it's going to be a long every Sunday going to be a long Sunday for the Panthers. They're trash. But what's going to be a long Sunday is me as a Chargers fan, Sean, because this team is undefeated. They be cheating. I would just say what it is, and I knew the domino was going to drop. And I'm still mad because, like, we middle of the pack, we need a receiver. You don't go get her. And it's been receivers for the low, going for the low. Once, who was the first domino to drop? Devontae Adams goes to the Jets. I say, all right, cool. That was just kind of expected. And when I seen Amari Cooper go to the Bills, I'm like, okay, oh, they getting rid of receivers. Everybody call around for receivers. My Chargers, we need a receiver. No. The Chino Chiefs land DeAndre Hopkins was traded to the Chiefs. Rashawn, they cheating, bro. They cheating. How do they keep getting better? Oh, Pacheco out. We just go get Kareem Hunt. And Kareem Hunt looking like Kareem Hunt from a couple years ago. They, you know, Rice went out. Don't worry. I'm going to get somebody who's a better pure catcher of the ball than him and DeHop. And Travis Kelce ain't even started looking like Travis Kelce yet. We know what would help him, but I don't want them to figure out what they need to help him. What was your reaction to this? Because I ain't gonna lie, I was pissed. I'm not gonna lie. I was pissed seeing this.
So you know, I will remind people that when DeAndre Hopkins got released by the Cardinals a couple years ago, one of the places that everybody said should be in on him was Kansas City, and it was the general thought that he would go to Kansas City then. But Kansas City had to work out some things. They had, you know, obviously Chris Jones, so they needed to get signed, and some other, you know, contracts, some money issues they needed to work out. And DeAndre Hopkins ended up going to Tennessee, presumably to get a bag. Got a 2-year, $32 million deal.
You gotta take that cool money.
Yeah, cool. So, you know, not surprising this happened, given that there's been interest there, mutual interest there, I think, for the last couple of years, and now it's able to happen. Certainly, he helps them.
He do more than help, Shy. He do more than help.
I mean, so, and I think we have to understand what Kansas City is right now. Kansas City is a team that isn't necessarily depending on one guy. It's really, truly... they are truly the sum of their parts. And so when I look at this offense, they're not asking him to come in and play 65, 70 snaps. They're not, especially not early on. They're going to ask him to come in and be the piece that they need, particularly later in games. And if they're playing in a close game, and someone who can work, you know, the intermediate part of the field. Will it help open things up for Kelce potentially? I think that's where you may see it help some, even though I do think we are starting to see kind of the down slope of Kelce's career.
Hey, Wayne, I'm trying to tell you, Sean, he gonna retire this year.
I don't know.
I see him retiring.
I really don't know. I really don't know, and I don't want to predict what he's thinking because, you know, just
never know.
But I say that to say, I think I agree with you, SB. I think he's much closer to retirement than we might have admitted a year or so ago. It could be this year. It could be next year. You know, that remains to be seen. I would, you know, be curious.
That Taylor Swift money, man. He getting too caught. He don't want to. He ain't got that hunger no more, man. He figured, we good. I don't gotta ball out no more. I don't gotta pay for everything no more. Oh yeah, I'm chilling.
Yeah, and I mean, and again, I mean, certainly that helps. Now, I mean, he's not married to her, so you know that. You know, also, you know,
brother got the podcast. You know, they just party. He seen his brother on TV, just having fun. Wait, I don't got to get hit no more. I'm trying to tell you, Sean. He don't play with that same energy and urgency no more, man.
And again, I think some of it is just he is older. He has taken, you know, his share of punishment. You know, playing for as long as he has, and. Again, I think, you know, he's got to try to save as much gas as he has left in the tank for the postseason, because that's what we ultimately judge this team on, the postseason at this point. So, you know, I do think there's some merit to what you're saying. But that said, the Chiefs as an undefeated team got better.
Yes.
But I don't think you're going to see the better immediately. I think it's going to come gradually and again, more especially in the postseason.
I don't want to see that. I don't want to see it. I know it's coming, Sean. I know the three-peat coming. I know the three. Oh, my God, bro.
Well, I think there's a team in Baltimore that's going to have something to say about that.
Have been looking good. Baltimore started putting it together.
You know, I still hold Houston very highly as well. Too. I think Buffalo could have something to say about that, although not at the same level of Baltimore and Houston. You know, so Baltimore could have something to say about that. And, you know, I'm not going to sleep on, you know, some of those Titans in the NFC that could represent in the Super Bowl either. So, you know,
it's a possibility.
You know, we'll see.
I don't know. Also, when it comes to different trades, so what would have been even crazier if that happened, even though he'd been kind of injured this year, they originally tried to get Cooper Kupp, but it was like problem with moving stuff around, contracts and money, so they couldn't get him. They need another team involved.
And in my opinion, I think DeAndre Hopkins fits better than Cooper Kupp on that.
I think so too. Then it was obviously a lot of rumors and trades going around that Matt Stafford, the Vikings was trying to get Matthew Stafford. Mm-hmm. Well, every source has checked the boxes on this story, and it has claimed to be 100% false. And only person when we first talked about this that I feel said anything logical about why Matthew Stafford should go to the Vikings that I heard, Sean, from you, when you said he got coaches over there from LA, so he come in, he'll fit right in, know the system. So it makes sense for them maybe calling for him because the coaches, the familiarity. But then I looked at it as when I first seen it, I was like, it makes no sense for the Vikings to do this trade. You just got JJ McCarthy. You know he's hurt, but he's your future. And Sam Darnold has been playing out of his mind. He's been playing better. So it's not like he's playing bad. So there's no reason to, like, mess up the team chemistry for me. So I was like, I didn't think this was a good trade for the Vikings. Because don't get me wrong, Matthew Stafford is better than Sam Darnold right now, 100%. But it's not like if they get Matthew Stafford right now, would you say the Vikings is a guaranteed Super Bowl contender team? I wouldn't 100% say yes. I couldn't 100% say yes. There'd be a team I wouldn't want to play. I'll tell you that, though. I wouldn't want to play, but because now you got to fit them in. You got to learn the scheme. And he ain't got a full training camp. I mean, like, it's harder. It's easy to switch a running back, a wide receiver, maybe a corner, maybe a D lineman over. But you switch it like a quarterback where he got to know everything. And got to understand the assignments, know what to change. It's hard to do it mid-season. You could do it when you got a full training camp with a team, with a receiver. So then that's all like, nah, I didn't see it happen. But what's your reaction to this being shut down?
So I would say, first of all, I'm glad it got shut down because it needed to be shut down. There's a pundit who likes to make and I don't want to say his name because I'm not the biggest fan of this person, but he made a general point a few years ago about NFL quarterbacks. And when you just look at the division, if you have the fourth best quarterback in your own division, you're probably not a real contender.
That's true.
I can't disagree with that. But I also believe in what's the infrastructure around that quarterback. If that quarterback is the fourth best quarterback in your division. And I'm not going to pick on anybody because I don't want to say who I think is the fourth best quarterback in any division right now. But the Vikings have a really good infrastructure. So even if whoever their quarterback is the fourth best quarterback in the division, and when you look at that division with Jared Goff and Jordan Love and now Caleb Williams, you know, whoever's starting their quarterback for them is probably going to be the fourth best quarterback in that division. But because of their infrastructure, current infrastructure, they seem to be one of those teams that can withstand that.
Yes.
I'm glad, again, that they're shutting it down. I think, again, Darnold's played well. And I think Darnold really is a few more games from playing, you know, at a level where he's probably going to end up getting a bag. And it would not shock me if that bag came from the Minnesota Vikings. You know, so, you know, it's going to be an interesting, you know, rest of the season for them. Obviously, Minnesota, they played last night on Thursday Night Football, lost their starting left tackle for the season.
That's a tough hit.
One of the best left tackles in the game in Christian Darrisaw. But that said, you know, I'm glad the rumors got shut down. And we'll see, you know, how they, you know, weather these next few weeks, you know, with Sam Darnold obviously still being their starting quarterback.
So, Sean, we're going to switch over to the hardwood. We're going to get some basketball in. Make sure you guys like, make sure you guys share, make sure you guys subscribe. Join the Real Takes Up Faith Debate movement. So, Shaquille O'Neal was on Angel Reese's podcast. Obviously, Angel Reese has been podcasting a lot during his offseason. She already said WA don't pay her bills, so now she got to, you know, she got to do stuff to pay the bills now, Sean. So Shaquille O'Neal used Caitlin Clark as an example for lowering the Rams. Now let me finish before anybody in the chat go crazy to Angel Reese, because the problem with the WNBA is viewership, and, you know, people want to make it more entertaining. Shaq used Caitlin Clark, for example, because she was shooting logo threes. That's why everybody liked Caitlin Clark, because she's doing something we've never seen before. Shaq was suggesting that the only thing missing, which a lot of people have been saying, the only thing that has been missing from the WNBA is dunking. And dunking is a huge part of entertainment value when it comes to basketball. And now any other thing with women's sports, and it seems like the only one that's like trying to hold on to this is women's basketball. It's not about trying to be the same level as a man. You should just be like in your own lane, because even women's volleyball, they lower than that. women's baseball. They play the softball. So it's not that nobody is disrespecting the women, these guys. It's just that maybe if you lower something to add something else to your game so we can see stuff that we never seen before, like if I see Angel Reese come down the lane and dunk on Caitlin Clark, that'd be crazy. And I'd be like, oh my God, that's wild. And my only problem coming to players is like every time you try to suggest something like this or any different things for WNBA players to help them entertain, they shun everything off. Like she instantly shunned it off. And I'm like, okay, what other suggestion do you have? Instead of just saying everybody just need to tune in and watch, that's not good enough. You got to add something else to the table to get people to watch. And I think if you lower the rim, which would be more women to be able to dunk, I think that'll help elite a lot. So I've been agree with Shaq when he first suggested this a long time ago, and I still agree to this day.
Let me ask you a question. Do we have the same viewership issues in college women's college basketball?
No.
How high is the rim in women's college basketball?
I believe it's the same height. Mm-hmm.
The issue is not the height of the rims. The issue, more or less, or one of the issues, is the time of the year.
Who they can really compete with, though? Like
summer.
Oh, well, yeah. We outweigh nobody in the house. That's true.
If you think about me, where you live, it gets unbearably cold during the winter. So you want to take advantage of the few good weeks and weekends that you know the weather's probably going to be nice. Mm-hmm. That's a big part of it. But also, I think the other parts, and there's a lot of it, and I don't want to we could do an entire podcast about this, SB. And, you know, and shout out to Maria, because I know she has thoughts on this as well, even though, you know, she is, you know, a huge fangirl of the WNBA. But she is. I think it's calendar, but also it's the steadiness of when games are going to be aired and played. Mm-hmm. At times with the WNBA schedule, particularly the national television schedule, it feels very random. Where, again, in other sports, you tend to know on, and that's not just the W's issue, that is a media issue, and again, particularly which networks that those games are on. Mm-hmm. I don't think the game necessarily needs to change. I think the way the game is being marketed and the way the game is being put out to the public has to be fixed. Because again, women's college basketball doesn't deal with the same issue. Now, the advantage women's college basketball has comparative to the WNBA is women's college basketball has a fan base that is generally based on alumni or state or region that you're in. So even if you didn't necessarily attend a college, if that college is in your area and you grew up in that area and sports from that college are a big part of that area, then there's going to be a little more interest in it from that area. So it can survive regionally in that way. The WNBA doesn't necessarily have that same luxury, part because a lot of your original franchises are not even, they don't even exist anymore. Or they've relocated to other locations and had to rebrand and change who they are. So I don't think lowering the rims is the issue. I think it's figuring out how do you stabilize these teams from a television perspective, but also in the market. We know the WNBA is going through expansion, adding two teams with the intent of adding two more teams down the line, or I think they said before 2028 was the goal.
Right.
Stability
for
the teams and for how you put the product out to the public. And when I say the product out to the public, not the ticket buying, we're going to the arena public. The at-home television device public. That to me is the bigger issue.
So I know you said with the round of change of the year. So where would they fit in? So say if like they switched the WNBA around this time of year, what they gonna play all their games on Tuesdays? Because Sundays is cooked, and NBA on Saturdays is like where would they fit in?
That's the interesting part. Where would they fit in? The reason why I think summers were chosen was because of the availability of arenas during the summers. Because, and again, if you're in an NBA market and you're sharing an arena with an NBA team, then, you know, NBA team tends to have priority. So that is the other part of it, you know, as well. So I think there's a lot of, you know, factors here. But I think the big thing is stabilize the teams in the markets and stabilize the calendar for when games are going to be on television. Because that to me is the most important thing. It's that's what will, I think, help the WNBA more than anything. It's not a bad product to watch, in my opinion. Right. But that stability matters.
I have to agree with you on that one. Now, Sean, this topic next, we might disagree on, because only got one thing that I might say. So Klay Thompson went to the Mavericks. Klay Thompson goes to the Mavericks. Remember, they made all the jokes. Klay Thompson didn't hit a shot in the preseason game. First game with the Mavericks, he set the Dallas Mavericks 3-point record. Not in the debut, just in general. So in the debut check and in general, he broke the 3-point record. I think this might be a steal maneuver that the Mavericks just pulled off, because you got Kyrie and got Luka. Klay Thompson is going to go here and literally just shoot open jump shots, which is what he did that first game. And Sean, I know you're a big Ray Allen guy. Steph Curry is the greatest shooter of all time. Nobody going to deny it, but it's because the shots he take, the ability to make shots off the dribble, how he shoots shots and create shots, that's why you're given that title. But we talking about just shooting alone, pure shooting alone, Klay Thompson has got to be the greatest pure shooter of the basketball I have ever seen in my life. This run with the Mavericks is going to refresh everybody's memory, because he don't even have to do too much, Sean. He don't. He just got to play off Luka, dribble. Everybody, you got to guard Luka. You got to try to double Luka once Luka get hot. Or you got to double Kyrie. Now you get Klay right there. The easiest three. People will remember how good Klay is just out playing the Mavericks. And it's not like he's not going to be doing a crazy. He's going to be shooting wide open jump shots. I would shout out Klay for that, though. But yeah, Sean, I'm gonna stand on my statement. Pure shooter alone, Klay Thompson is the greatest pure shooter I ever seen in my life.
I mean, so I will say this, SB. You know, if I were teaching a young kid how to shoot, there's two guys' film I'm pulling up, Ray Allen and Klay Thompson, just in terms of the mechanics and the purity of those mechanics and how their shots are the same every single time they shoot the basketball, regardless of the circumstance. You know, it's very early. I make it a general rule with the NBA that I don't go crazy over one game. I usually try to give it about 20 games before I really try to really to give time to really assess what a team is and where they are. So everybody going nuts over one game is baffling to me. But that said, I think last night's game was a good preview of how Dallas could use Klay, but also I expect that their offense and the sets that they run will continue to evolve throughout the season, not just because they'll have to, but because teams will figure out exactly what, you know, if they just continue to do what they did last night, they'll figure out how to counter that, and the Mavs, as a result, will have to figure out how to counter that and make sure they don't become predictable, particularly in the half court. Now, I will also say, too, some of the shots that Klay took last night, I think were as a result of, you know, just from a game plan perspective, you know, Luka was still finding his legs because he didn't play in the preseason with the calf injury. And certainly, I think that factored in as well. But I will say, I think the Mavs did a really good job just last night of just ball movement, and the energy of ball movement really mattered as well last night. So, you know, let's see. It's early. But I do think, again, when you watch it, we just go back to the finals. What was their Achilles heel? Their Achilles heel was when Luka and Kyrie would create, they weren't making shots. And you know, Klay Thompson will be 60 years old and still able to make shots because shooting is the last thing. You know, I can go out today and play horse against anybody, and I would probably
knock it down.
I would probably still out shoot. Now, am I gonna blow by you? No. But I can still outshoot many people. I'm not saying that to be braggadocious. I'm just saying, knowing as a shooter, the shot is the last thing to go. So,
No, I'm not gonna lie. This, from what we kind of seen, we didn't get the full spectrum yet of what this team can do, but they do look scary. You know who else looks scary, Sean? The Boston Celtics. With all the noise that this team deal with through the offseason, which you would think, like, with a team win a championship, they'd be praised, partying up. No, this is the one championship team I've seen they deal with a lot of scrutiny. Tatum off for a good start. The simple question is, can Tatum, especially with all the noise that was going on during the offseason, especially with Team USA, can Tatum win the MVP and lead the Celtics to another championship again?
I'll speak to the latter first. Yeah, he could absolutely help lead the Celtics to another championship. Lead is relative. Because again, we know in the finals who's the finals MVP, and deservedly should have been it could not have gone either way.
It could have went away, man.
Tatum had one great game in the finals, but in terms of the entire finals, Jaylen Brown was the most consistent and best player for the Celtics in the finals and in the Eastern Conference finals as well. So lead is relative. And again, I don't think they necessarily care about who's leading and who's
the, not at all.
No, they care about winning. So can Jason Tatum help lead the Celtics to a championship, another championship? Sure. Absolutely. Now, can Jason Tatum win the MVP? That's a very different conversation. Because I think it would take a historic season from the Celtics with Jason Tatum clearly
the best player,
as their best player in that historic season.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's necessarily what the Celtics are trying to do this year. I think the Celtics are trying to make sure they got the number one seed in the Eastern Conference.
And
presumably in the entire NBA, but they're not. They're not going to go chasing. They're not going after the Warriors' 73-win season. They're not going after, you know, the longest winning streak in NBA history. That's not how they're playing this season. They're playing this season to make sure they get through all 82 games relatively healthy and with the highest seed as possible going into the playoffs and a chance to defend their championship.
I'm not going to laugh. If they was to break one of the records, that would be crazy. The winning streak record or – I don't think I'm going to see nobody beat the 73 and 9. But people used to say the same thing about 73, 72 and 10. They beat 73 and 9. That would be crazy. Or like 74 and 8. That would be crazy to do.
Yeah, but you got to have great depth. And you got to have a lot of things break your way. And remember, when that Warriors team won 73 games, they started the season out 24-0, if I remember correctly. So it was – literally they just jumped out there so far that it was like, okay, well maybe
we could go for it.
We got a chance to go for it. And again, they had to have some things break their way. But also they had break their way. They were relatively healthy the entire season.
Until they got to the playoffs.
Yes. Yeah. But they also talked about how chasing that was basically a drain for them. So by the time they got to the Western Conference Finals, that team was they weren't running on fumes, but you could tell they were that it was. So I think that's where a lot of these teams, and again, a team like Boston, who's won a championship, and the Warriors do this the year after they win the championship. When you go on those late June and those June runs and those long, and you're playing 110 games a season, it catches up. So you got to really try to manage this season, you know, as much as possible if you're the Celtics. Because, again, nobody played more games last year than the Celtics and the Mavericks. So, you know,
that's true,
they got to be very, very careful about how they're managing that season.
And this also season. This is, yeah. And also, who want to care about how they manage the season with Joel Embiid? Well, he abruptly said, hey, I'm done playing back-to-backs. Well, the NBA said, buddy, we not having that. We got to investigate this. So the NBA is investigating 76ers over Joel Embiid's player participation. I think, Sean, people forget, the NBA is still a job. And also, you get paid of being one of the best players in the league because your performance and availability. Sometimes more of your performance, you know, that's why we still see guys like Kawhi and Joel Embiid get paid, even though they don't play as much. But you can't openly tell your boss, hey, man, look, bro, I know my schedule says Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or Monday through Friday, but now I'm going to switch it up. So I ain't doing no back-to-back days. I still want my same pay like I work all the 5 days. I'm just gonna be here Monday, Wednesday, Thursday. I'm gonna take Tuesdays and Fridays off, but I still want to get paid for the day. How would that conversation go? Like you won't have a job, but I get it's NBA, you know, it's contract, but it's like you're taking away money. Because if I'm a 76ers fan, the 76ers play today. Today's Friday, 25th. Yeah. They got a game today. Play the Celtics. Tomorrow they got the Lakers. Joel Embiid don't play back-to-backs. So now it's taking away consumers from two point of views. From a viewer perspective where I'm like, oh, man, we playing Joel Embiid ain't playing. We probably going to lose anyway. Then also, me as a fan, hey, I know Joel Embiid not playing this back-to-back game. Why y'all charging me the same regular price? I want a lower price. I'm not coming to the game. And the NBA going to look at that, and that's going to start to be a slight of concern. You can't just openly say, hey, man, I'm just not going to play back-to-back games. I think it takes away from the integrity of the game. This is where with a lot of people be like, oh, the old heads be wild on the young. You know, this part of the reason why the old heads be wild on y'all, because you got players that paved the way for you to get paid this much money, get paid these benefits. Medicine did have advance. I get that. But you have players before you paved the way who wouldn't get paid little to nothing and played every game and competed in every game. It played games hurt. And we're not saying, like, not no tool stuff. Like, you ain't putting your life on the line. But if you are good to play, you got to play, brother. You got to play. You could even limit your minutes on a back-to-back game. He just said, I'm not playing, Sean. And I'm like, no, I'm not rocking with this. I'm not rocking with this. If I'm a 76ers fan, I'll be pissed. And then also, he ain't gonna take less money because he's less doing back to back games. No, he gonna want that full 193 of that 3-year extension. So I can say Philly, you can get rid of all your dreams about a championship. Y'all ain't getting it.
So SB, I had the pleasure of chatting with a Philly fan last night. A guy I used to co-host a show with. Mm-hmm. Who's diehard Philly, everything, Eagles, Phillies, Sixers. And so we're on the phone last night, we're chatting, and he said, I am out on the Sixers season. Mm-hmm. And he said he was so livid that, one, the audacity to come out and say, I'm not playing back-to-backs. Because if you know nothing else about Philly, the one thing about Philly is show up and give effort.
Mm-hmm.
The most beloved players in any sport in Philadelphia are generally not the most talented, but it's the ones who showed up and left it on the court, the field, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the audacity to say it. And to announce it. And like you said, it'd be this thing of to tell your boss, hey, listen, I'm not coming to work on Thursdays. Just know I'm not coming to work on Thursdays.
But you still better pay me on that Thursday. I still want to get paid for my Thursday too, though.
Right. I was trying to find a reasonable explanation for it. Mm-hmm. My big problem, SB, with this is one, like you said, the Sixers go out and sign Joel Embiid to this extension. They sign Tyrese Maxey to a max extension, and they bring Paul George in free agency to a pretty hefty deal, 5 years, $208 million. Four years, $208 million. The expectation is we are going for this right now. Mm-hmm. They're going for this right now. Generally means that your best players, your most highly compensated players, are on the floor and playing, mm-hmm. and giving your team the best chance, not just in the regular season, but also when you look at seeding in the regular and how that plays out the regular season. The regular season does matter because your seeding matters come playoff time, generally speaking.
Come on now.
That's first. The second thing is the Sixers, I think, largely want to make sure Embiid is healthy going into the playoffs. That's been a big issue with Joel Embiid. I think the last time Joel Embiid was healthy going into the playoffs was the bubble.
He had months off before then. So.
Right, which is why I would tell people that's why that season's such an anomaly. So when there was another guy who always gets hurt, who plays, who's healthy going into the bubble, and I said, well, perhaps that's the anomaly. Because this is someone who, and I'm not going to say the person's name and the team they play for, but
they play for the Lakers.
Okay. So the point is that person generally is never healthy. And now, because they had a break, you know, a 4 month break, it's possible it helped. So I think when you talk about that type of stuff, SB, I think the issue comes down to they want to make sure Joel Embiid is healthy, but he should have never announced this because there's a way to load manage that people don't talk about enough. And load management could be, hey, starters, we're going to go out here and we're going to play against this team and we're going to smack this team in three quarters. We're going to be up 30, 35 going into the fourth quarter. None of our starters need to play in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
Right. That's how you load manage. So that way, again, that's 12 minutes. That's a whole quarter that you know that guys aren't playing because you're killing teams. Mm-hmm. That was the Warriors in 2016. They were literally smacking teams, and the stars weren't even seeing the floor in the fourth quarter a lot of those games. That should be the mentality. It's because you know you got to get ready for the next game. And any moment you can give guys some rest during take advantage of it. That's not the mentality anymore. And that, I think, is a big part of the problem. And that's why you hear some of the veterans and some of the older players complaining about it, because that was how they thought about it. And that just doesn't exist in today's NBA in that way.
Sean, the worst thing that happened in basketball, and I'm sorry to tell you this, and the problem is this player is never healthy. When Kawhi Leonard won the year with the Raptors and doing that load manage, the same thing. That was the worst thing that ever happened to basketball.
Right.
And here's why. This man Kawhi goes to a team in the Raptors who was already set, and it was good without DeMar DeRozan. Was great with DeMar DeRozan, but became elite with Kawhi Leonard because the only thing this team really needed was a closer, in fourth quarter closer. Yeah. This team, with Kawhi even being out missing, could still be even without DeMar DeRozan, the team that was set in Toronto could still been like a top three seed-ish. They very good. Only thing they needed was when they got to the playoffs, they needed a closer. With Kawhi winning that championship, it set the program and people mass, you know, copycat league. it said the program people mad. Hey, look, we could just sit our star out, don't really do nothing during the season, and then we should win. But the whole time was the team that he already had was great from top to bottom to the 12th man. The team was great. The only thing the team needed was when the fourth quarter come, we just need you to shoot the ball and get us to take us home. Literally all Kawhi really did that year. I know he played good defensively. It did play good defensively on the other star guys. Match up with the star. Match the star power. Ain't no other team been that good where you just insert a guy. He did. No other team has been good to do that from top to bottom. Kawhi tried to do that with the Clippers. They weren't good from top to bottom. They were star heavy. When you that star heavy, your stars need to play. The 76ers team is not that deep and not that good. Joel Embiid, you can't miss games. You need to play. Y'all team is star heavy. And with Kawhi doing this, this set this mindset to everybody that this thing is cool to do, and it's not, and it has. I'm sorry to say it. I don't want to put this on Kawhi legacy, but him winning the championship in Toronto ruined basketball. It ruined people managing the thing. Load management and taking games off is cool. Now, if you want to go into the deeper thing of load management, Greg Popovich started. That's a different subject for a different day, but Kawhi putting that mindset where I could just miss games, don't do back to backs. Even though he was hurt for real or not, whatever, cool. I can miss games, not do back-to-backs. And then came in the playoffs, played excellent in the playoffs. So it's like, oh, he rested during the season and just came up and won. But not even acknowledging the fact that Toronto team was fucking freaking very good from top to bottom. And all he had to do was match up with the star player and hit clutch shots at the end of the game. And in the championship that they won, everybody on the Warriors got hurt. Everybody, literally. It was Steph and Draymond and nobody else, because we all know if the Warriors was healthy, they was losing. If you want to go into deep with Philly, should have beat them. But it is what it is happening. Milwaukee wet the bed. I ain't gonna lie. He played well against Giannis. But I digress. Sean, trying to get to some sad news. University of South Florida coach Amir Abdur Rahim. Has passed away at the young age of 43. From what they were saying, I think it was like somewhat a medical procedure. I'm trying to pull the article back up. The school said, here goes, South Florida coach Amir Abdur Rahim, who led the Bulls to a America Athletic Conference regular season championship a year ago, has died. The school announced Thursday he was 43. The school said he died from complications that present while he was undergoing a procedure at a Tampa area hospital. What was the quote said? I don't know who they said. Quote said he was authentic, driven, and his infectious personality captivated all of the Bulls Nation. UCF athletic director Michael Kelly said, "Coach Raheem leaves a lasting impact on our student athletes, the university, and the community. We are supporting those closest to him, including his family, the team, and the athletic staff, to ensure they have the resources they need to deal with this tremendous loss." This is a big loss. First of all, prayers to the Raheem family. And prayers to the team, like, too. Like, people don't understand, like, if you don't play the sport, and especially if you're really close with your coach, you got, like, a father-son relationship with your coach, an aunt relationship, a mentor relationship. And especially if a coach actually, how it seemed like he had grips with this team. I wasn't too much familiar with this team like that. It seemed like he had a good relationship with the team. So I know this is a big loss for the guys, because it's just like, that's coach. You know what I'm saying? That's pops. That's Unc. That's the mentor. That's the guy who come. That's the voice that you need. And like, prayers to his family, because you never want to lose no one. But what was your reaction to hearing this news?
It was very shocking. SB, you know, certainly young guy, 43 years old. 43 is not old at all. But here was somebody who, you know, got his head coaching start at Kennesaw State. The first season at Kennesaw State, you want to guess what their record was?
Very positive, I should say. Probably it's gonna be positive.
No, the first season at Kennesaw State, they were 1-28.
Ooh, wee.
By his fourth season at Kennesaw State, they were 26-9. and had gone to the NCAA tournament.
Oh, okay.
So here was somebody who built a program and then comes to South Florida, and he has a really good year last year at South Florida. They were 25-8 and lost in the NIT in the second round. So he was building a program. He was someone that was very, very well-regarded in the coaching community. Certainly, he is the younger brother of Sharif Abdul-Rahim. He played in the NBA for many years as well. So, you know, basketball is definitely a family affair. But, you know, certainly outside of basketball, just, you know, prayers to his family, his players. You know, again, you know, when you go in for a medical procedure, this is not the expectation. You know, and so certainly, you know, you can imagine the shock of it to his family, his young children, his very young children as well. So prayers to them, and that they, you know, get through this time of grief.
I have definitely prayers to the family. Ashar, we got to get into our picks of the week. It's that time of the show. Before we get into our picks of the week, we have to do our injury bug of the week. Injuries do suck. It takes away from the game. Who you got for your injury bug of the week, Char?
I got DK Metcalf.
DK Metcalf.
Obviously very, very concerned. They're saying he's week to week. When they say somebody's week to week, that usually means they're probably not going to play this week. So they got a big game against Buffalo. They haven't completely ruled him out, but I think it's highly unlikely that he plays. So I would say definitely a DK Metcalf.
For me, I got to go the young quarterback, because it's a chance that we could miss the number one and number two pick go against each other. Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels obviously had the rib injury last game. He said he wants to play, but it's not up him. It's not his decision. It's up to the medical staff to clear him and the team to clear him and give him a go. I hope they give him a go, because this, I had this game once Jaden Daniels kind of established himself, like, is that good as he was, and Caleb Williams started showing his attention, I was like, okay, when this game come up on, I was like, oh, they actually play each other this year. This must see TV. I want to see this. So that's my injury bug of the week. Sean, it's that time of the show.
SB and Sean, NFL picks of the week.
Let's do it, Sean. NFL picks of the week. I think we are now, what week we in? Week eight.
Week 8.
And it's what, 4-3 now, right? You've been on a heater. I got to lock in. We locking in this week, but you have been on a heater. We can't let Sean tie back up right there this season.
But, I mean, you know, listen, eventually the Matrix is going to be restored. You know,
No. We ain't doing that. We finna jam the Matrix back up, man. We can't do that.
All right. First game. No London games this week. Game is early game. Baltimore at Cleveland.
Baltimore at Cleveland. It's going to be a good game. I think it's going to be a great defensive game. And it's been talked about, which was so dumb. We talked about trades. They said, well, they might trade Miles. People have been calling about Miles Garrett. The Browns would be a fool if they let that man go. But I just think with the offensive concerns with them right now, even though Nick Chubb is back, our big famous Jameis might be starting now, right? Who's going to start for the Browns?
Jameis is starting.
Which he could come. Hey, I wouldn't be shocked. Well, no, Amari. But I would be shocked with because Jameis showed he could put up some points with any team. But I'm going to just stick with the Ravens, because they hot right now. They're getting in their mode. But I don't think the Baltimore Ravens going to win this game. It's easy. It's not going to be a blowout. I got the Ravens winning, but not in a blowout victory.
This is a very interesting game for me, SB. As you mentioned, Jameis starting. When he came in the game last week, you know, again, was late because he was the emergency quarterback for some reason. Game was pretty much out of hand, but he was able to move the offense, help move the offense up and down the field. I think you're going to see more Chubb this week for the Browns. This is a bit of a trap game for the Ravens to me. In all honesty, their defense, you know, has played okay. But coming off a Monday night, game in Tampa, going back on the road again, I think the offense is going to be fine. The Ravens defense does concern me in this game, particularly if they can't find a way to slow down the run. I'm actually going to take the Browns by 2 in this one.
You ain't trying to restore that matrix. Yeah, you take. But I'm not mad at the Browns because the Browns could mess around and win this game. I ain't gonna doubt. I don't doubt Famous Jameis.
Yeah.
He was preaching when the Deshaun Watson. He preached the sermon.
Next game, Tennessee at Detroit.
Give me Detroit. We ain't got to talk too long about that. No D Hop now. We just Will Levis there to just create memes. I'm good on that.
Jameson Williams will miss the next 2 weeks. He's been suspended by the NFL. A little bit of a loss for the Lions. Not sure about David Montgomery's status for this game as well either. He got hurt in the game last week in Minnesota. That said, Tennessee's a mess. One of the more disappointing. I thought Tennessee was going to be better coming into the season. They're a little bit of a mess. Games in Detroit. I expect the Lions to come out and win. So I'm going to take the Lions by 12 at home. Mm-hmm. Next game, Arizona at Miami.
Tua is back. I expect Miami to put up more than 15 points now. Any other time, I will take Miami to win. But he just coming back. I don't know if he's going to be able to stay in the whole game. Knock on wood. I don't know if he got a little rust on him. Oh, my God. I'm going to take the Dolphins. I'm going to take the Dolphins.
You're going to take the Dolphins. Arizona coming off a big win on Monday night against the Chargers.
That's the slight why. I didn't like that we lost to the Cardinals. Slight why.
Yeah. Just FYI, Call of Duty Black Ops 6 did come out.
It did come out today.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm happy about my Dolphins pick now. Yeah, he's going to be tired.
No. So he's on the road. So I'm guessing the game is probably at home because, you know, he's on the road.
Oh, no. You can take your game with you and just plug it up to stuff now. He got money, so he probably got the screen on top of his PlayStation. And you can get a little Wi-Fi box too. He's playing. That's true. He's on that game.
No, that's true. No, I like what I saw from Arizona's defense last week. I think that will travel well for them. I think Kyler Murray can make enough plays. And again, he's shown that, you know, he can make some plays. So I'm actually going to take Arizona on the road in this one. I'm going to take Arizona by 4 on the road.
The crazy part about it is I think just because he know the meme's going to come, I think he's going to try hard to make sure he win at least this game. Next week it'd be different because they'll be like, dang, that's crazy. As soon as Call of Duty come out, you know the meme's going to be there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
The meme's going to be there.
Dang, next game. New York Jets at the New England Patriots.
This is going to be a gimme game for the Jets just so they can get themselves in order. The Patriots offense can't consistently score enough, and then obviously they're not trying to win no games anyway. Only thing is going to be annoying that the Jets are going to win. Devontae Adams probably going to go off maybe for 2 TDs or at least 1, probably get close to like 100 yards, if not 100 yards. And I'm going to hear all this week of how the Jets, Aaron Rodgers is back, they look all the same. Imagine you. Y'all only beat on the Patriots who tanking on purpose, but I'm going to take the Jets. It's just going to be so annoying just to hear all this week about how, yeah, the trade working now. Look at the offense. We getting back together. Devontae Adams, the Jets are here. It's all we're going to hear. And he's like, bro, y'all beat the Patriots.
This game, again, concerns me. You know, New England's coming off a tough loss in London against Jacksonville. Got called out by Gerard Mayo as being soft. There were some people that didn't particularly care for that. I didn't necessarily have an issue with it. I think it was a way of, you know, trying to use the media to light a fire under that team. So I didn't have an issue with it. I think this is going to be a very close game, though. And I do think Drake May has shown that he can, you know, do some things. My big question for New England is, can you run the football? Because if the Jets have a weakness defensively, they don't stop the run very well. Yeah. So you got to be able to run the football. But that said, I'm going to take the Jets in a close one. I'm going to take the Jets by one in New England.
Okay.
Next game, Green Bay at Jacksonville.
This is going to be a good game. I'm going to go with Green Bay. Not too much to it. I don't trust Jacksonville. They be too on and off for me. But, you know, they did look good last week, but, you know, who did they play last week? The Patriots. Of course you're going to look good. Yeah, so give me the Packers.
Yeah,
this is more about a fool's gold.
Yeah, this is going to be, I think, a Packers win as well. Weather calls for some rain. Jordan Love's got a – ever since Jordan Love wore that you-know-who jersey, he's been, you know, throwing interceptions. He need to get that juju off of him badly.
I don't know who jersey he can wear then.
Yeah, no, I mean, where the last guy who played there, you know, because he didn't throw interceptions like that. So, you know, get that juju off him. But Jordan Love's got to take better care of the football. You know, in spite of them, you know, winning, he's been a little
reckless.
Yeah. So this is going to be weather, some rain in the area during the game. So I think, you know, Green Bay's going to have to run the football with Josh Jacobs, but I'm going to take the Packers by 9. And also the Packers have fixed their kicking issue with Brandon McManus. So I'm going to take the Packers by 9. Even if they got to kick field goals, take the Packers by 9.
What's next?
Next game, Indianapolis Colts at the Houston Texans.
I'm going my MVP, CJ Stroud, every week. I don't know if he lead the MVP race, though, but, you know, I predict him. I know, but in my mind he is. But, we got to go with the Texans.
CJ Stroud has been pressured on 35% of his dropbacks this season. I expect the Colts to be in attack mode defensively.
That would be smart.
That said, I don't know if the Colts offense will generate enough to keep up with Houston. This was one of the – they played in week one. This was a very close game, kind of a back-and-forth game in week one. But I'm going to take the Texans at home by 6.
Okay.
Next game, late afternoon game. It's personal. This one's personal. New Orleans Saints at the LA Chargers.
I just want to hear you say you picking the Chargers. That's all I want to hear.
No, your pick first.
Oh, you know, I'm picking go ball go. We balled it up, baby. What we playing at again too? Oh, you coming to LA? Oh yeah, we finna go and put the beats on y'all real quick.
Yeah.
You be prepared. That text coming. You just go see Justin Herbert come across your phone. Just be prepared.
So I expect there to be a lot of Saints fans in the building because, you know, that's generally how it goes when you play at SoFi. That said, you know, get Chris Olave back, get Taysom Hill back. That should help Spencer Rattler some. You know my general rule. I don't pick against the Saints as a general rule because I just don't do that. I can take this one if it doesn't go my way, but I'm taking the Saints on the road. Although I do think the Chargers are going to come out a little angry because of what happened on Monday night, but I'm going to take the Saints by 1.
You got a point to prove.
Next game, Carolina Panthers at the Denver Broncos. Bryce Young back starting for Carolina. No Deontay Johnson, no Adam Thielen.
The toilet bowl right here. I don't want to pick the Broncos, but unfortunately, Bo Nix is randomly my fantasy quarterback, and that's the only reason I'm picking the Broncos. I'm gonna go Broncos. This is the toilet bowl right here of the week. Nobody will be watching this game. The tumbleweed bowl.
I'm taking Denver as well at home just because of their defense. Also, you know, again, without Adam Thielen, without Deontay Johnson, I just think, as we said earlier, it's going to be a long game for that Carolina Panthers offense. But I'm going to take the Broncos by 4 at home.
What sticks?
Next game, divisional game, Kansas City Chiefs at the Las Vegas Raiders.
Another week of the Chiefs being undefeated. Chiefs. You know, I ain't picking the Raiders. I'm going Chiefs. This is the gimme game of the week. D-Hop should be playing this week. A perfect team to play to ease your way back in is be the Raiders, only because even if you think their defense and Crosby could get to Patrick Mahomes with the line trouble, I don't think they're going to score enough. So I got the Chiefs beating the Raiders.
This is generally a very close game, and the Raiders generally always seem to get one against the Chiefs. That said, they're a bit of a mess right now. Although Brock Bowers is, you know, having a pretty good rookie season at tight end for them, they just don't have much else to get excited about. Kansas City's defense will travel, will play well. I'm taking the Chiefs on the road by 6.
Mm-hmm. Old Patty Mahomes.
And our last pick before we get to the key matchups, Monday Night Football, New York Giants at the Pittsburgh Steelers.
You see your boy Russ Danger cooked out there, man. Your boy Russ, Mr. Danger.
He microwaved.
I'm taking Mr. Microwave over the Giants. I'm taking Mr. Microwave. You can take the Giants and go ahead and go with Daniel Jones, Danny Dimes in Todd's voice. Well, he's not Danny Dimes. He's Danny Crimes right now.
Yeah, no, I'm not doing that at all. No, it's the Steelers. I will take, even though I do think that Giants front seven will give Steelers all they can handle, I just don't trust the Giants secondary. And as you mentioned, the Giants offensively still aren't very good. Did not look good last week against Philly at all. So I'm taking the Steelers by 4.
Okay, let's do it.
Key matchups
of the week. Let's do it.
We have 5.
Okay. 5
matchups of the week.
Mm-hmm.
First game, rematch of Thursday Night Football from a couple weeks ago. Atlanta Falcons at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Another, this is going to be a good game. This is going to be a good game.
No Mike Evans.
No Mike Evans.
No Chris Godwin. Chris Godwin was out for the season.
Yep. That's how I said it's. That sucks for that part. As I say, Baker got to take care of the ball, but it's going to be even harder to do that because now you got two of your biggest options out. And I think even though it's in Tampa Bay, you know, I've been rocking with Big Baker, but I think with the loss of those two pieces and the possibility of Baker not taking, because now you can't afford those 2 or 3 turnovers. Even the defense try to get you back, but now it's like what guys you're going to go to where it's like, because those are his two main guys where you go to, especially Chris Godwin. I'm going to take the Falcons on this one. I think the Dirty Birds come into Tampa Bay and get the job done.
Yeah, I think, again, it's going to be a tough week for that Tampa offense without their two best receivers. Mm-hmm. Their two best offensive players, if we're being honest, outside of Tristan Wirfs. Atlanta's coming off a very tough loss. They got kind of manhandled against Seattle last week. I think they're going to come back, be very sharp.
They have something to prove.
They do have something to prove. They got to find their pass rush, though. They still have one of the worst pass rush rates in the NFL. And I think, again, a couple weeks ago was a shootout in Atlanta. I think it's a little more low-scoring game, but I'm going to take the Falcons in Tampa by 3.
Okay.
Next key matchup, Philadelphia Eagles at the Cincinnati Bengals.
I'm going to pick Eagles. I'm going to go Eagles. This game going to be close to what it is because I think Joe Shiesty has been playing phenomenal. I just don't – I don't know if the Bengals can keep up with everywhere else around on the field, defense, offense. Defense and offensively. So I think the Eagles are trying to get it together, and I think this would be a big win for them. I'm expecting big things for Saquon Barkley, but I think if the Eagles come in to play, try to take the Bengals slightly, they will lose. because the Bengals have shown many ways to get games, but I'm going to go with the Eagles.
This is a very interesting game. The Eagles defense has played well. They've not allowed a touchdown. Eagles defense has not allowed a touchdown the last 2 weeks since coming off the bye. I have to believe that that Eagles defense will continue to play well. Now, again, when you look at the matchups at receiver versus the Eagles corners, Slay, Quinyon Mitchell, who's had a very good rookie season, by the way.
Yes.
And I believe he was my defensive rookie of the year choice. He was my defensive rookie of the year choice. That's why I'm bragging. But the point
I'll show up in the check right now. Let me check.
Yeah, no. But no.
Yes, he was.
But that said, you know, you're not going to stop the Bengals from scoring, right? They're going to score some points. Uh-huh. I think if the Eagles defense can hold Cincinnati's offense to 17 points, I think the Eagles win this game. What the Eagles don't want to necessarily do is get in a shootout, a back-and-forth shootout, even though, again, with A.J. Brown, you know, when A.J. Brown, you got A.J. Brown one-on-one, I go A.J. Brown 99% of the time. Nothing against any corners. And Cincinnati's defense isn't very good. But I do expect them to try to, you know, keep Saquon in check. No Dallas Goedert in this game. So it's really going to come down to A.J. Brown and certainly Devontae Smith. But to your point, I just think the Eagles have less questions. And again, it hasn't been pretty for their offense, but they found enough, you know, the last couple of weeks to win. I think they'll do the same thing this week. So I'm taking the Eagles by 4.
Cool.
Next game, late afternoon game, Buffalo Bills at the Seattle Seahawks.
No DK Metcalf.
Yeah, both teams leading their division currently.
I'm going to go, and since Seattle too, it being Seattle does make a difference. And Seattle's been nice this year. No DK out, right? No DK.
Not confirmed, but I think it's highly unlikely that he'll play.
I'm going to go Bills. I think the Bills been on the run. I'm going to stick with the Bills. I kind of want to pick Seattle because they're at home, but I'm going to go Bills.
You know who's leading the league in passing yards?
Don't tell me Josh Allen.
He is not.
Okay. Geno Smith?
Geno Smith.
Oh, shout out Geno.
Geno leading the league in passing yards. No DK this week, well, potentially. Mm-hmm. And questions about whether or not Kenneth Walker will play as well. Mm-hmm. Seattle's a tough place to play.
Yes, it is.
Their defense is 5th in pass rush this year. So I expect them to, again, try to come after Josh Allen. Really like their young secondary, their corners as well. And I like what, you know, Mike McDonald has done with that defense to complement Seahawks offense. Mm-hmm. Buffalo, again, pretty much, you know, it was a little rough early on against Tennessee last week. But mm-hmm. once they find their footing, it was pretty much kind of what everyone expected. But I'm going to take Seattle at home. I just think it's a very tough place to play. And I expect them to take advantage of the home field advantage. So I'm going to take Seattle at home by 4.
Okay, Seattle by 4.
Next game, very exciting game potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago Bears at the Washington Commanders.
Ooh, whoa, this game going to be an action-packed game. I will be watching this game. It's in Washington. You got the number one and number two pick possibly going at it. I'm going to go with the hometown team. I'm going to go with the Bears. Got to go with the hometown team.
Yeah, the questions about Jaden Daniels, whether or not Jaden Daniels will play. Obviously, we take these on Fridays, so you know anything can happen between now and Sunday. Mm-hmm. But even if Jaden Daniels plays, I don't see Washington winning this game. Bears got a good defense, not great, but a good defense. And I think, again, they figured out some things offensively with, you know, Caleb Williams and that offense. Washington's defense is not very good. It's a lot of smoke and mirrors with them. But and they did, you know, while they played well against Carolina last week, it was Carolina. So let's just consider the opponent there. That said, I'm going to take the Bears on the road as well. I'm going to take the Bears by 5 in this
Bears. But what's next?
And last game, last key matchup, Dallas Cowboys at the San Francisco 49ers.
They're battle with a lot of injured teams. Ooh. I'm actually going to go to the Cowboys. I want the Cowboys to win just so I can see more Jerry Jones nonsense. So I got the Cowboys.
Really?
Yep. Just because I want to see the drama. Yep, I'm going to Cowboys.
Huh.
The 49ers banged up anyway, Sue, so that's the best time to take a Cowboys pick.
No disputing that. Mm-hmm. Both teams are pretty banged up. Dallas coming off a bye week. I always tend to go with the team coming off the bye week.
You ain't gonna pick Dallas. You ain't gonna do it.
San Francisco did lose a tough one last week against Kansas City. One thing I think that San Francisco offense with Brock Purdy, they like to work the middle of the field. Kansas City did a great job of taking that away and kind of forcing San Francisco to really work outside the hashes a little bit more and also, you know, really kept the running game in check. But this Kansas City's defense, Dallas defense is not like that. Jordan Mason could have 150 yards in this game, and it would not shock me against that Dallas defense who can't stop the run to save their lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
Only because the game's in Santa Clara, I'm taking the Niners because the game's in Santa Clara. But I do, we talked about it before we taped SB. This is one of those games where it truly feels as if the loser of this game could very well miss the playoffs. So very much a key game, I think, for both teams. But I'm going to take San Fran simply because they're at home and simply because I think they'll be able to run the football against that Dallas defense.
What you on that one? How many teams did we pick differently?
We picked 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games differently.
Okay, cool. That's good. Episode 12, Sean. Who do you got?
I got two guys, actually.
Okay. I think I know one of your picks.
What's one of them? What's one
he of played them? For the Eagles.
Yes. Yep. Yes. Yes. Yeah, Randall. Randall Cunningham. Mm-hmm. And the other, might surprise you, is Doug Williams.
Oh, I like that. That's okay. He was in your bag a little bit. Okay. I got to get in my bag. Obviously, my first one is the GOAT, Tom Brady.
GOAT.
Got to go to GOAT for me. GOAT for Sean. And also, my second one, I got to get my bag a little bit. I'm going to go champion Bruce Bowen.
Okay. All right.
I got to go my bag a little bit. Go my bag a little bit. But thank you guys for watching. It's been another great episode of Real Takes Over Fake the Base. Make sure you guys like, make sure you guys share, make sure you guys subscribe on all platforms, YouTube, Apple, Spotify, and just enjoy the show. Give us a listen. Comment what you think. Give us your sport takes. That's it. And rock with your boys. This has been SB and Sean Webb, Real Takes Over Fake Debates, and we will see you guys on Monday.
Peace.
Takes over fake debates.